What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Red Blacks Unfiltered. This is the podcast where you can hear candid conversations with your favorite Red Blacks players. I'm your host, Jacob Kelly. And before we jump into today's conversation with RJ Harris, there's a couple things that we need to go over first. Number one, if you enjoyed today's podcast, please consider leaving a rating and a review. The more positive ratings and reviews we get, the more it helps new people find this podcast. And if you're one of those people that have recently found the show, thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe and stay tuned for future episodes. Put out a brand new interview every single Monday. And now, without further ado, I present to you RJ Harris, Unfiltered. RJ Harris, welcome to Red Blacks Unfiltered. How are you doing today?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Appreciate you for having me.
I'm excited, man. So I want to go all the way back to the beginning. And so you were born in Germany. Now I'm probably going to say this incorrectly, but is it Würzburg, Germany? Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. Würzburg, Germany, home of Dirk Nowitzki and RJ Harris.
So what's the story then? How come, like, why were you born in Germany and then how'd you end up in Maryland?
So I grew up in a military family, both my mother and father. They were in the army and they were stationed in Germany at the time. And that's where they met. And that's where they had me. And like I said, military, you know, you bounce around a lot. So as soon as I was born, a couple months later, they were moved to the States and we came over to the United States, kind of went to South Carolina, bounced around South Carolina. And then I came down to Maryland and we moved around Maryland a little bit and it's been home for the past probably 25 years, maybe.
Okay. And then, so when did you start playing football? How old were you when that started?
I was actually a little late when I started playing football. I was always a basketball player. I think I started maybe in the fifth or sixth grade, around then sometime. I started on the defensive line. I was a defensive end when I first started playing.
That's crazy. So actually, I want to talk about basketball first thing. So you said basketball was kind of your first sport before football?
Yeah, basketball. That was my life. That was my love right there. Still my love. I still love basketball to this day. And yeah, that's kind of where I started. I started probably before I could even walk. I was had a basketball in my hand, just throwing a basketball up all the time. So that's always been my first love and my number one sport.
That's awesome. So then ultimately, why did you decide to go the football route and try and go professionally with football instead of basketball?
So what happened, I kind of, like I said, I started so early that by the time I got to high school and going to college, I was just burnt out of basketball. You know, I was playing AAU. I was in the AAU circuit and AAU is a year round thing. So I was literally playing basketball, you know, 7 days a week, 365. And just after so many years of it, I just kind of, like I said, I was burnt out and I wanted to try something new. And football was there. I had a lot of friends who were already playing football. They came up playing football and I wanted to just kind of venture into that. So I just started, like I said, middle school and I just found a love for it.
Mm-hmm. And so you played high school ball at Arundel, right?
Yeah, Arundel High School.
Arundel.
Yeah.
And you play, so I saw somewhere that you played wide receiver and DB, right? Is that true?
Yeah, I did. I played offense and defense. That was the last time I really got to play defense. But yeah, I had fun playing in high school for sure.
So when you say offense and defense, was that like for your first 2 years you played DB and then you switched to wide receiver, or were you playing both sides of the ball during a game?
I played both sides of the ball. I played receiver all game and then wherever they needed me at on defense, like based on injuries or things like that, I could go in that corner or safety. So I played that a little as well.
That's wild. And then so for your final year at Arundel, I have a couple stats written down here. These are also state records. You had 28 touchdowns in your senior year and you also had a 20 catch game for over 230 yards.
Yep.
Which is just, that's crazy. Do you know if those records still stand?
I don't think the touchdown record stands anymore. Someone broke it. I believe they broke it last year, actually. I didn't get to make it to the game, but I remember everybody was calling me and texting me about it, that my record had been broke. And I mean, it's cool. I was happy for the kid from Broadneck who broke it. And actually, that last game, it was 20 catches and it was 300 yards. It wasn't 230. It was actually 300 yards.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry for selling you a little short there.
They said it was the best high school football game in the state of Maryland. The team that we played against, I'm actually still friends with one of the guys from the other team. He actually had 414 rushing yards and 6 touchdowns. So they were just running down our throat and we would just air it out. I think the final score ended up being like 55 or 51 or something crazy like that.
That's insane. So kind of with those like big numbers put up in your senior year, what was recruiting like for colleges for you? What was that process like?
You know, going into my senior year, I was playing with the best quarterback in the state of Maryland, Billy Koch. And he was a 3 or 4 star recruit by Rivals. And he was having all kind of attention from Division I schools. His dad was a defensive coordinator for the University of Maryland at the time. So he was really heavily into the recruiting field. And I just, you know, everybody's recruiting Billy. So they were like, all right, he's throwing it to somebody, obviously, and which was me. And I just felt that I would garner some of that same attention, but it really was not like that for me at all. Like all those D1 schools were coming in every week, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, Kansas State, all schools were coming. And they were talking to Billy and I'm just sitting there like, all right, maybe they'll come and talk to me. But I was getting no love, no attention whatsoever. I was just slept on. And a lot of teams were turned off by my size and my speed at the time in high school. So I kind of fell towards the Division I, AA, Division II recruiting levels. And that's where a lot of my offers came from, mostly the FCS, which is Division I, AA. And ultimately, University of New Hampshire offered me, and that's where I ended up committing to.
And why did you pick UNH?
So in high school, we ran a spread, no huddle offense. So it was, and UNH, their system was a spread, no huddle system. And at the time, you know, I was 17 years old. That was all I was looking at, was just the football aspect of it. And then I finally started to like, all right, what do I want to do after football? And they had a great athletic training program that I wanted to, which is what I thought I wanted to do at the time. So it kind of all worked out for me, you know, the football and the athletic training program that they had to offer there.
And for people that don't know, how far away is UNH from your hometown in Maryland? Like how far away were you moving to go to school?
It was about an eight-hour drive up the seacoast, up north to get to New Hampshire from where I live in Maryland.
So was that, I guess I was assuming that was your first time really away from home then, was going to school.
Yep. You could say that. Yep. That was the first time. Like during the summers, I always went down to South Carolina and stayed with my grandmother, but I could always come back home. But this was the first time that I was really on my own.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your grandma? Like, what did you do when you went down to visit her in South Carolina?
All my cousins, all my family still is mostly from and lives in South Carolina. And all my cousins were around the same age. We all had a love for sports, basketball, football, just any sports. So we would just all go down there for the summertime and just hang out with our grandmother and just be outside playing sports all day long, all summer long, staying up late, just driving my grandmother crazy, but it was a fun time.
That's awesome. And so back to UNH, was it an adjustment for you to be away from family and be that far away?
Yeah, for sure. It was definitely, it took a lot of time for me to get adjusted. My entire freshman year, I could say, was an adjustment period. I didn't know if I was going to make it through my freshman year, to be honest. It was just so much going on, so much freedom on my own. Like nobody, my parents not coming into my room, waking me up, telling me to go to school. You know, I could just, if I wanted to go to class, I'd go. If I didn't, I just wouldn't go to class. Things like that. I was on my own. And it was definitely like the culture was completely different as well. Like it was a complete culture shock being up there because New Hampshire, the university, I believe, was like 99.3% white students, and there wasn't a lot of diversity there. So that was just a complete culture shock coming from where I lived at in Maryland to going there. It was like a slap in the face. So I just felt like I didn't really fit in outside of football. You know, the football thing, the team is close and connected, but outside of that, I didn't really feel like that was my place. And it just took a, like I said, my freshman year, it was rough. I was on the academically ineligible list after my first semester. I had to get my grades up, and my coach came in to talk to me. He was like, you have the talent to play here, but if your grades don't pick up the second semester, there's nothing we can do for you. So I kind of just, I put my head on straight, put the blinders on, and just, you know, just got back in the books, got my grades up. And after my freshman year, I think I was above 3.0 every semester after that. And from there, I started to play more on the football field. You know, I started to make friends outside of just my football teammates. And things just started to go really well for me over the next couple of years there.
That's awesome. And then with your freshman year, so one, you had the adjustment of moving away, plus the culture shock. Plus on top of that, you were a redshirt freshman, right? So you went from being the guy to a redshirt, right?
Yeah, that was hard. That was really hard.
Yeah. What are some like lessons and just like you learned about yourself during that time as a redshirt?
You just have to just stay patient. Like that's the biggest advice I could give to someone, just stay patient. Like you have to go out every day and compete and prove that you belong. But sometimes there's seniors in front of you that have been putting the work in for 4 years. And even though you're a freshman and might be talented, like those guys deserve and they earn that chance. So sometimes you have to just take a backseat role and just learn. Like I was just a sponge my freshman year, looking up to some of the seniors who were in front of me and just soaking up so much knowledge and trying to just learn and incorporate some of those skills that they had into my game so that when I did get my opportunity, I was well equipped and well prepared.
Mm-hmm. And talk to me about when you finally did get that opportunity. What are some of your favorite moments or your favorite highlights from your time at UNH?
I remember it was my second game, actually. We played University of Lehigh, down at Lehigh, and it was my first career touchdown. I remember it was like a 20-yard corner route for a touchdown. I was just like, I was a freshman, second year redshirt freshman, and I just remember, like, I was so excited, like, finally. That first year of just redshirting, not playing, watching games, and finally paid off. I was finally, you know, able to get into the end zone and make a play. So I was excited about that for sure.
And there's one play I wanted to ask you about specifically. So in 2014, so you were a wide receiver, but in 2014 you had two rushing plays and one of them led to a touchdown. What was the scenario where you were getting the ball in a place where you could rush in a touchdown?
Yeah, so actually at UNH I played all over the offense. I played wide receiver, I lined up at quarterback, I lined up at running back. I was all over. But that one specific play, I know what you're talking about. It was a double reverse, and we ended up flicking the ball back to the quarterback, and the quarterback was on the opposite side of the field, and he threw it back across field to me, and I had nothing but blockers in front of me and about 65 yards of green grass. And everybody on defense was just so confused by all the motion and all the reverses. And I just caught it, and I just followed my blocker straight downfield to the end zone. And that was our first game that we had actually on ESPN. It was on ESPN2, actually. And it was a sellout game. Fans were going crazy. It was a playoff game, a night game. And I just remember, like, how excited I was. The stadium was rocking. And that was definitely a memorable touchdown of mine at UNH.
100%. And then so when you were at UNH, did you make it? Was it the semifinals in state that you guys made it to? Or like where? How far did you guys make it in terms of playoffs and stuff?
So my junior year and my senior year, we made it to the national semifinals. So just before the big one in Frisco, Texas, we actually ended up losing both times. But it was the farthest that we had ever made it in UNH football history. They had never made it past the quarterfinals. And my junior and senior year, I was able to help lead us to the national semis.
That's crazy. So I'm sure with making it that far into the national semis, there's probably a fair amount of exposure for you. So at that point in time, especially during your senior year, were you interacting with a lot of NFL scouts? And like, what was the process there in terms of entering into the draft during your senior year?
So it's crazy because it literally all just went full circle. Like it felt a lot like high school all over for me again. Like I was putting up crazy numbers. I was dominating at the level I was at. And I was just looking at my numbers and games compared to other receivers of that draft from that draft class. And I just, I felt really confident about what I had put out on film and on tape, that I was going to get an opportunity to, you know, maybe make it to the NFL combine, maybe hear my name, you know, in the later rounds of the draft. And it didn't happen for me, you know, at all. Like, I didn't hear my name called in the draft. I didn't get invited to the NFL combine, but I still intrigued a lot of teams. Like, a lot of teams were constantly calling my agent once I finally signed with the agent. They were like, all right, we want to come work RJ out, or we want to fly RJ out. Chip Kelly actually came up to UNH and worked me out himself at UNH. And I was buzzing. Like, I just had a lot of numbers, stats going for me. And like I said, it just, I didn't get the opportunity to hear my name called in the draft. And I was breaking records at UNH as well my senior year. And it just didn't work out for me. So like I said, it felt like high school all over again. Like, just doing it big, thinking I'm gonna get an opportunity, and nothing comes from it.
You did get a phone call on draft day though from a team, right?
I did. So after the draft, you know, I was obviously hurt, just like, you know, everyone who doesn't get to hear their name called. It's like, you're hurt, you're down. But before I could even, you know, really hang my head, my phone was blowing up. Like, I was getting calls left and right from my agent, from teams, from scouting directors, GMs were calling me, offering me priority free agent contracts. And it was happening so fast, and teams were saying, like, all right, we need your answer in the next 10 minutes. So I'm just bombarded, and I'm calling my agent, and I was watching the draft with my brother. I was watching the draft with my brother, my mother, my father, and two of my best friends. And I literally told them, every team that had called me, I was like, go onto that team's website, look at their draft, look at what receivers they just drafted, look at what receivers are already on the roster, and let's just, you know, make a educated decision on what's the best fit for me. And out of all the teams, we felt that the Saints were the best fit and the best opportunity for me to try and go earn a roster spot. So that's when I ended up signing with the New Orleans Saints.
And tell me about your first kind of experience when you got down to New Orleans for camp for the first time, like, as a new professional, like, what was that experience like for you, especially being around guys like Drew Brees and stuff like that?
It was crazy. I was so blown away. Like, when I walked into the facility and I'm seeing everybody, and I remember, so like, this story stands out to me. Like, at the time I didn't know who Cam Jordan was. And Cam Jordan obviously is an all-pro defensive end for New Orleans. And I had no idea who he was. And I got there for OTAs and like the spring training, and we were doing workouts, and I just happened to pop up in line, and we were doing agility drills, and I was going against Cam Jordan, and I'm like, this is a big dude here, you know what I mean? I'm a receiver. I should be able to just breeze through this and beat him, no question. And Cam, as big as he was, he got to be about 280. He was flying through those drills like a receiver. Like, it was crazy. Like, he was 5'8", like 160. Like, that's what you would have thought he was. His footwork was insane. And I was just like, so this is the level. And this is the talent that's here at this level. DNs are going through these drills looking like wide receivers. And that was the first, like, experience that I had seeing someone. I'm like, all right, this is top-level competition. And the second was when I finally got to meet Drew Brees. I was nervous. I was shook. He was like, hey, RJ, you mind catching for me? Stand right here and catch for me. Cause we were just soft tossing back and forth. And I was like, yes, sir. He was like, sir, you don't got to call me sir. I'm your teammate. I was like, oh man. Like, I was just so blown back that I didn't even think. I was just saying, yes, sir, just off the rip. And I'm like, this is not, you know, it's not a teacher. He's not a, you know what I mean? He's not my coach. He's literally my teammate. So that's when I really had to realize, like, all right, you know, you're here for a reason. You belong here. These are your teammates. Go out there and prove that you belong here.
And what are some things you learned from Drew Brees, just being around him for that time? Like, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. Like, what are some things you took away from your time being around him?
His work ethic and his attention to detail was second to none. Drew was the first person at the facility every day. He might have beat the janitors there. He was the first person there, last to leave. Like, we we wouldn't start practice until, I can't remember exactly what time, but say practice, let's just say practice started at 9. Drew was literally on the field warming up, going through his routine at 7:30, like an hour and a half before practice, before stretch. Drew was already broken a full sweat, gone through his whole full routine, and his clothes are soaking wet, like going out there to start practice. And I'm just like, that kind of work ethic is just, that's why he's one of the best. And then after, in the film room, he pretty much ran the meetings. Like, our coach was there, receivers coach, offensive coordinator, but Drew had the clicker. Drew was talking to everybody. Drew was making corrections. Drew was putting in new plays. And I'm just like, this guy's attention to detail, his work ethic, it just separates him from, you know, a lot of other quarterbacks and players in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. And then ultimately with the Saints, if I'm not mistaken, your first preseason game was back home at Baltimore, right?
It was. First game. First preseason game right at the, against the Ravens. So I had to get so many tickets for all my friends and family from around here because it was just so convenient. I live about 15 minutes away from the Ravens Stadium, so it was right down the street. So everybody showed up and showed out, and I didn't have the best game of my life, put it like that. I didn't think I was gonna make it past cuts after that game, but I did enough when they decided to keep me around.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but that was the first time you'd ever been in a pro stadium, period, right? Like, not just playing, but like, that was your first time ever in a pro stadium, right?
No. I got to play in high school. I got to play in the Ravens Stadium. We made it to states. So Maryland State football, they always had their states game at the Ravens Stadium. So we got to play there in my sophomore year of high school.
Got you. And then not shortly after that, but a little while after, ultimately you ended up getting cut by New Orleans. You ended up in Atlanta, right?
Yep. So I was on practice squad with the Saints for about 10 weeks. And after I got released, I got picked up by the Atlanta Falcons, and I was on their practice squad to finish out the season. So I went from being, you know, around Drew Brees, Marcus Colston, guys like that, Brandon Cooks, to, you know, Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. So it was just a crazy transition, like, get to see some of the greatest in my first two stops in the NFL.
And what are some lessons Julio taught you as a fellow wide receiver?
Just how he approaches the game. Like, he was just has a, just a dog mentality. Like, he's really like just a straight dog. Like, nobody can guard him. He knows that. He wants everybody in the stadium, in the NFL, to know that. And that's how he approaches it every day. He's always working on his craft. He's always staying after catching extra passes. And he was an open book. Like, he was always willing to learn. Even as great as he was at the time, he was still willing to learn. So that was cool to see that.
Mm-hmm. And then ultimately it didn't work out with Atlanta. So what was kind of the plan after that? Like, were you like, I'm going to go to the CFL, or did you try out for any more NFL teams before coming up north?
I actually went back to the Saints after the Falcons, after my stint with the Falcons. I believe 2 days after the season ended, 2 or 3 days, the Saints reached back out to my agent, and they actually re-signed me to a futures contract. So I was right back with New Orleans after my stint with the Falcons, and I went through the whole process again. You know, I was back there for spring training, OTAs, camp, everything again. So that was my second stint back with New Orleans.
Okay, and then so, how did you end up in the CFL then?
So after my second stint, after training camp, I actually got released. And once I got released, I was home for probably a couple of weeks. And that's when I found out that my girlfriend, Tiffany, she was pregnant. So we were expecting our first child together. And I was torn in between, like, do I still want to wait it out and try and get back on an NFL team, or do I want to go up to Canada and just get right back to playing, you know, trying to get a steady income and things like that. And that's when I decided, all right, Canada is the best option for me at this time. And that's when I came up to Canada.
What did you know about the CFL before you got here?
To be honest, not that much at all. One of a running back, he actually, a running back from UNH, he was actually my host on my official visit when I visited New Hampshire. He played running back in the CFL for the Toronto Argonauts, and he won the Grey Cup MVP a few years prior. Chad Cackert, he won the Grey Cup MVP for Toronto, and that was pretty much all I knew, was that a running back who hosted me played in the Grey Cup and won MVP. But besides that, I didn't really know too much about the CFL.
And it was actually Toronto where you went. That was your first experience in the CFL, was with the Argos.
Yeah. So my first year, my first couple months was just a carousel ride in the CFL. I got signed to, like you said, to Toronto, and I went up there for their rookie mini camp. It was down in Bradenton, Florida, I believe, at IMG. And I did rookie camp there, and that's when I was like really first introduced to the whole waggle, to the CFL thing, my first taste of real Canadian football.
And like, was the waggle the hardest thing you had to adjust to? Were there any other CFL rules that took some time for you to get familiar with?
The waggle is definitely the hardest, trying to pick up on when you're coming from down south to Canada, for sure, is the waggle, not being stationary, not having to, you know, be set at the snap of the ball. That was my biggest thing coming up to the CFL.
And you mentioned you were on a bit of a CFL carousel. So after the Argos, you ended up in BC, and then after BC, you ended up in Winnipeg. And then from Winnipeg, you ultimately signed with Ottawa. It's like, how hard was it for you to be bouncing around and not have that stability early on coming up to Canada?
Oh, it was demoralizing. Like, I almost hung the cleats up. Like, I was really ready to just say, you know, this isn't for me. I'm ready to just, you know, get back home, you know, just start my career, just start working, you know, and just be there for my family. And I was just so just hurt. Like, every time I go out to a new team, I give it my all. I think, like, all right, this is going to be my opportunity. And I just got released. And that was definitely, like I said, it was hard on me. And when I came home, I was talking to Tiffany, and I was just like, we were just said, like, don't give up yet. You know, like, this is all happening for a reason. Like, something good has to come out of this. Like, you've been cut by, you know, a couple NFL teams now. You've been in Canada for just a few months, and you've already played for three different teams. Like, something good is going to come of this. So we just, you know, sat down, I prayed on it, and I didn't give it up. And then a couple weeks after I got released from Winnipeg, that's when Ottawa called, and they gave me an opportunity to come out and be on their practice squad.
And what was your mentality coming into Ottawa after having been released by those three other CFL teams? What was your mentality? Because obviously you had a chip on your shoulder at that point, right?
Yeah. Well, the chip had always been on my shoulder. Like, since high school, like I said, I've always had that chip. I've always been the underdog. I've always been overlooked. So the chip didn't just magically appear, you know, after, you know, getting released from Winnipeg. It's just, I just went in and just, you know, I just told myself, like, you can't quit. Like, all these people have the wrong idea of your game. You know what I mean? Like, so it's not necessarily, I always tell myself, I wasn't trying to prove anybody wrong. Like, I wasn't trying to prove all the teams that cut me wrong. I had nothing out against them. It came down to me versus me. Like, I was trying to prove myself right. I knew what I was capable of. I knew that I could play at a high level. I knew that I deserved to be on a professional team. So that's just how I approached it. Like, you deserve to be here. You belong here. Now just go out and prove it to yourself that all the work that you put in has gotten you to this point.
Mm-hmm. And then with Ottawa, you were on the practice roster for your first season. And if I'm not mistaken, you flew home for the birth of your daughter, and then you couldn't get back across the border due to passport issues, correct?
Yeah, it was the craziest thing. Like, I had, like we've already said, I was on three CFL teams prior to that. I've been all across the country of Canada, and I went home for a week to see my daughter born. And when I come back, there was an issue at customs where they were just like, all right, you can't get back in for the rest of the season. Like, you're not going to be here until you get this passport issue cleared up. So I ended up missing the entire last third of the season. I was forced to come back home to Maryland, and I had to leave all my stuff in Canada. I had to leave my car, all my clothes, everything. So I was just back home, just with nothing at the time.
That's crazy. I didn't even think about having to leave all your possessions here. Like, I just figured it must have been tough coming back into the country to play football, which is obviously hard in its own right. But I didn't even factor in the fact that all of your possessions would have been up here as well.
Everything was here. I had my car, and I couldn't come and get anything. They said I had to leave everything. So that was another rough time for me. That was another rough about 2.5 months that I was just kind of day to day figuring things out.
And what did the Red Blacks say then when you called them and let them know that you couldn't get back in due to passport issues?
It was out of their hands at that time. There was nothing that they could do. You know, that was immigration doing all of that. So there was nothing they could really do for me. And they just said that once I got everything cleared up, they wanted to have me back and that they were going to, you know, they weren't going to bail on me because of something that was out of my control. And they gave me their word. And Marcel, you know, he stuck to his word, which I'm truly grateful for to this day. And after the season, you know, I was able to get the passport issue straightened out. And Marcel, he was a man of his word, and he had me back for rookie camp the following year. So, like I said, I'm forever grateful for that.
And then so shortly after that, you made your pro debut on July 6, 2018, I believe, was your first regular season game.
Yep. I don't remember the exact date, but it was against Montreal.
Mm-hmm. And then a couple months later, you had your first touchdown against Montreal, correct? Like your first professional touchdown?
Yep. First professional touchdown. I remember that. It was a play that we had put in. We had been practicing it for a few weeks. And finally, it got called in the game. And I was like, all right, you've been doing this for a few weeks now. You've been waiting for it. You finally got it. Let's go make the most of it. And it worked out. Trev threw a dime, and I caught it, and that was the first one.
Mm-hmm. And then later on in that season was the Grey Cup. Can you kind of tell me what your experience was like in the Grey Cup? Obviously, it didn't end the way you wanted it to, but that whole week leading into it, I'm sure it must have been one of the biggest games of your football career. So can you tell me about that experience?
For sure. So just as the season went on, I just gradually started to come into my own. I just started to get more and more comfortable. You know, I was comfortable with who I was playing with around me at the time. You know, we had Brad, Greg, Deontay, Trev was at quarterback at the time, and they were starting to trust me more and more. You know, I was a young guy at the time out of that group. They were all CFL veterans, but they were starting to trust me and realize like, all right, RJ is a player. Like he can help us out. And earning their trust, I just wanted to make sure that, you know, I was always prepared. You know, so when the time did come, you know, obviously all of those guys were the focal point. They made our offense go. But when the time did come for me to get mine, I wanted to make sure that I was prepared and ready for that. And that's the same way I approached the Grey Cup. I just made sure that I was prepared the entire week. It wasn't a week of, you know, taking off and enjoying being in a different city for a week and having a nice hotel room. Having your family out there, like, that's not how I approached it. It was just another work week for me and another opportunity for us to go out and try and win, you know, the biggest game, like you said, of my career.
And then obviously I don't want to spend too much time on the 2019 season because I'm sure everyone's trying to just not focus on that one right now. But what did you learn about RJ Harris in that time going through such a difficult season?
Sometimes you need something like that to just humble yourself. You know, after my rookie year, you know, and after us as Ottawa making it to the Grey Cup, we came in kind of on a high horse. You know, we were like, all right, let's go out there and do the same thing. Let's run it back immediately. And it was a humbling season for us. You know, we got smacked in the face. We got smacked around a couple games. And it was just something that we had to really, you know, look in the mirror and just say, like, we got to keep going out. We have to keep fighting. We have to keep putting the work in. Like, things might not be working out for us, but we still have to – we can't just give up on the team. And it was definitely a piece of humble pie, and that's how we took it. And this year we're taking things differently going this year. You know, we're going in. We're trying to keep our heads down. We know we're the underdogs. We're just going to grind, put in the work in camp, and just see how things happen for us this year.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the 2020 season, you're going to be one of the leaders on the receiver corps. You're going to be one of the vets. How are you going to approach being a leadership type role in 2020?
See, the good thing for me, like I said, I've been surrounded by great company my past couple years here in Ottawa. You know, my first year, I got to really watch and learn from the likes of Deontay, Greg, Brad. You know, last year, I was able to see how someone like Brad handles this type of season. Because for Brad, I'm pretty sure that was one of the first times he's been in that situation as well. So I was able to see how Brad handles things, how he learned, how he helped keep the young guys going and, you know, keep them pushing along throughout a rough season. And now that 2020 is here, I've been able to see both sides. I've been able to be on a team where we made it all the way to the Grey Cup. And then last year, a team where things didn't work out as well. And I was able to see how Brad and those older veterans handled it. So now that it's my turn to step up and try and, you know, be that leader for those guys, I know exactly how to do it on both ends of the spectrum. So now it's just time for me to just, you know, give that feedback and be there for those young guys to lean on when things are going well. And then when sometimes in the season, things aren't going that well, I'll also be prepared for that as well.
And who are some other guys that you spend time with, whether it be in college or or professionally, that guys that people don't necessarily always get the limelight? Who are some guys that have had an impact on your career over the last 10 years?
Over the last 10 years, who's had an impact on my career? Let me see. Someone like I like hearing from older guys, like give me feedback because they've been through it. So like Corey Graham, I don't know if anybody knows who Corey Graham was, but he was with the Eagles when they won the Super Bowl. Like I'm able to talk to him on Facebook sometimes. Guys like Ricky Santos, he was my receiver and quarterback coach in college. He played in the CFL as well. I still am able to talk to him and chop it up with him. And then one of my best friends, Steve Timms, he played with me at UNH and now he's a coach. So whenever after games, I get to hear from him, like he played the game, but now he's also coaching the game. So I get to hear from not only one of my best friends, but he's also in the coaching ranks. So I'm hearing it straight and honest from a friend who also knows the game of football. So he definitely helps out a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately, and so does your family, do they come and live with you during the season or do they stay home and you just go back and forth between the regular season and the off season?
So my first year, they stayed home. That's obviously when Tiffany was pregnant with our daughter. So she wasn't able to travel. But the past two seasons, they have been up in Ottawa with me.
That's awesome. And then so talk to me about Milani, correct? Like how has being a dad changed your life?
Oh, it's the best thing to ever happen to me, to be honest. You know, it just puts everything into perspective. It puts life in general into perspective. You know, like, yeah, this is our job. Football is our job. But this is just a small window of opportunity that we get to play this game. Like, there's so much out there after life, to life after football. And I'm just trying to be, like, a great role model for Milani. Like, me not giving up on my dreams and wanting to quit football, like, I feel like that's a great lesson that I can show her. Like, if you have a dream and you believe in it, like, just stick with it, stick it out. And that's the kind of the role model that I want to be for Milani. You know, everything going on right now with the whole girl dad after Kobe Bryant's passing, you know, like just being a girl dad is the best thing ever to happen to me in life. Like she gives me joy every single day. So like everybody's always like, they were bashing on us for last season, how things went, you know, but people have to realize like we also have lives. Like we're fathers too, you know, we're boyfriends and husbands and things like that to our families. So I just want to make sure that I'm able to separate, you know, football from the big picture of life. Like this football is just a vessel that I'm using to propel me later in life, and setting up later in life has a big thing to do with me for Milani and my daughter and providing for her.
Mm-hmm. And you said people sometimes forget that you guys aren't just football players, you're also people. But what are some other things to think people don't realize about being a professional athlete?
Just the work that we put in. Like sometimes, like obviously last year, sometimes it wasn't showing up on the field, but I want everyone to know, like, we were working. Like, we were putting in the work in. We weren't just showing up on game day, just laying down. Like, we were fighting. There was a lot of fight in everybody from top to bottom, coaches all the way down. There was fight in the Red Blacks, but it just didn't always show up on the scoreboard. and just things like that. Like we don't do this. We don't go out with the mindset like, all right, this is another, you know, tough game. Like we're going out there to compete. We're going out there to play. We're going out there to prove like we belong here. This is our job, and we work hard at it. And that's another thing that I feel like sometimes gets lost between the fan to player relationship sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever think back to RJ in grade six, strapping on the pads for the first time to where you are now, a professional football player? Like how often do you reflect on that?
Oh, every day. I just think of how grateful I am, you know, to be in this position. Like I remember being, like you said, sixth grade, seventh grade, and being a young kid. Like I was always going to basketball camps, and I remember seeing at a basketball camp, I was seeing Juan Dixon and Steve Blake. And that was like one of the coolest things that I remember from a basketball camp, like getting to meet Juan Dixon and Steve Blake. Like Juan Dixon was like my hero basketball wise growing up. Like I loved Juan Dixon, and meeting him at such a young age and now being in a position where kids might look up to me the same way. Like that's just so much, you know, it's so gratifying for me. And that's why I was going to have a football camp this year. Like I wanted to finally use my platform to give back to kids who might be in the same position that I was in, you know, looking up to professional athletes. But obviously, unfortunately, due to this corona thing that we have going on, my camp is looking like it's going to have to be postponed. But back to your question, like it's really gratifying that I can be in this position to give back to the youth and to kids these days.
I hadn't even thought about the fact that your camp would have to be postponed due to the coronavirus. Is there plans to bring the camp back for next year though?
Oh yeah, for sure. I definitely want to make this an annual thing. I'm going to try and do it again. I haven't made the official announcement of that I will be postponing it, but just everything that the CDC is saying and the time frame, my camp falls within that time frame. So we'll see, and we'll make, you know, obviously a decision in the next couple of days that's, you know, safety first and taking the kids and the parents into consideration when we make the decision.
And speaking of your camp, I got to ask you about the significant amount of promotion it got when the president accidentally tagged you in a tweet. Like, can you bring me back to that morning where you're just sitting on the couch or whatever, watching Netflix, and you see that Donald Trump has tagged you in a tweet?
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, like, nobody in their right mind would ever think that Donald Trump is tweeting you on a random morning. And I just thought I was being trolled on Twitter. I thought somebody had a burner account just messing with me. And when I went to the account and I saw that it was a verified account, I was just like, all right, this is about to get crazy. And sure enough, I just started getting bombarded. I'm talking about thousands upon thousands upon thousands of notifications. Like in that first 72 hours, I got probably 40,000 notifications to my phone within 72 hours. Like my phone literally, I thought it was going to freeze. Like my phone, I just sat it there and it just did not stop vibrating for 72 hours. I had to turn the vibration off actually because it was just crazy. But like you said though, so once I realized he tweeted me and all this exposure that I was getting, that's when I just started promoting my camp. I just started telling everybody, hey, wrong RJ Harris, but follow my camp. I was posting pictures for it. I was posting the flyers and everything like that. So it was just a bunch of free promo that I got.
Mm-hmm. And you actually got to meet the RJ Harris that the president intended to tag in the tweet, right?
Yep. RJ Harris connected with me on Twitter. And it's crazy because he was actually a fan of mine when I was in New Orleans and from back when I was at University of New Hampshire. And he had my Saints jersey already prior to this whole thing going on. And he tweeted out a picture of him wearing my jersey from a couple years ago. I was able to go onto his radio show and just talk about everything that happened. So it was crazy how everything transpired and just came to light.
That's awesome. And I kind of want, jumping off from that, what do you do outside of football? Like, what are your interests when you're not practicing, training, playing football?
Me and my daughter, we go on adventures every day. Well, prior to this corona, we were on adventures every day. I don't think there's something that a toddler can do in Maryland that we haven't already done. Like we go everywhere. That's my little, that's my road dog right there. We just hop up in the morning you know, we'll get our breakfast and we'll just roll out. Like, we'll just drive until we come across something, and we just experiment everywhere. And then some days, you know, we'll keep it chill. We'll go to the library, go to the park, things like that. But it's just cool just being a dad and just seeing how, like, that's what gets me excited nowadays. Like, that's what's interesting to me, to see what makes her happy, to see what gets her excited, to see her interest. And that's kind of what I'm gravitating to now, just so I can just be there and just make sure that I can provide and give her that opportunity to realize, like, there's so much out there that she can do outside of just, you know, sports. Like, I play professional football. My girlfriend Tiffany, she played Division I basketball. So everybody naturally thinks, all right, athlete, just off the rip. And if she wants to be an athlete, like, that's cool with me. But I want her to realize, like, there's so much more out there that she can do, and that I want to make sure that that's accessible to her in case she does want to venture off, you know, in a different direction than what me and Tiff did. So whatever she wants to do, I'll make sure that I'm there to provide it for her and give her the tools needed to make sure she can get there.
That's awesome. And, like, what do you envision for yourself when your football career is all said and done? Like, what is your post-playing career look like to you right now?
I just want to be in a position where I can provide and help give back to kids who might go through the same thing that I went through coming up, like the underdog story. Like, I want to start a youth league, a youth gym where kids can come, you know, and play and train and be around professional athletes, and just from a young age all the way up, and just kind of just use my brand, like build my name, build my platform, and just help kids grow. And like I said, like, I want to target more of the underdogs, you know, not necessarily the top recruit in the nation. Like, I want the guys that really have to grind and get it out the mud, and like really help them and give them a platform and connect them with college coaches and give them an opportunity to make it to the next level. And just, you know, something that I necessarily didn't have when I was coming up. So I would like to be able to provide that for the younger generation.
And then, what is your advice to the younger generation that wants to play professional football?
Stop. Don't worry about proving anybody wrong. Like, get that out your head. Like, your only competition is yourself. Like, prove yourself right. Like, prove that you belong. Prove that the work that you put in is going to be worth it. Know your worth and just go out there and just compete. Keep your head low. And just, you know, just give it your all every day, every night. Like, make that your passion. Be diligent about your passion. Grind, and good things will come from it.
I heard somewhere that you want to write a book, and I was curious what you'd like to write a book about.
Who'd you hear that from?
I was just really good at research. I didn't hear it from anybody.
But not gonna lie, I would, like, that is something that's interested me. Like, maybe doing an autobiography, because I've been through so much in my life, like, leading up to this point, that, you know, it's hard to believe. Like, I could tell you some stories where you're just like, there is no way that happened, and that there's no way that you recovered from it. Like, I've been able to see things and bounce back from things, and I think it would be just cool to just, like, write that all down and just, you know, let other kids coming up be inspired by my journey, and show that, like, you can have all the success in the world at any level, like, which I was able to at high school, college level, and still fall short of your goal. But now you just have to take a different avenue to get to the final outcome, and just want to show kids, like, that it is definitely doable, and that there's a ton of different routes that you can take to get to the final goal. So I feel like writing that down into a book and letting people see that would be kind of cool, for real.
I like that, man. And I look forward to reading that book one day. But I want to thank you for taking the time to be on Red Blacks Unfiltered. I want to give you the floor. Where can the people find you on social media?
Social media, all my social media is the same. It's RJ Harris 15. That's my social media platform, Twitter, Instagram, and then on Facebook, you can just add me, just at regular RJ Harris.
Awesome. I'll make sure everything is linked in the show notes down below. And I want to thank everybody for listening once again. Whether you listen the entire way through, you only listen to bits and pieces, I really appreciate you taking time to check this out. Everyone go and follow RJ on Instagram, Twitter. I'll make sure everything's linked in the show notes down below. And make sure you follow the Red Blacks on Twitter at Red Blacks and on Instagram at CFL Red Blacks. Thank you once again for listening, everybody. We'll talk soon.